We're going to cross over live now to Beirut, where Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, is speaking. Let's listen in.
To all of you, God said, in the name of God, the merciful, you who believe, resort to God and say what is right. I welcome all of you and I thank you for this turnout today. Allow me to speak as usual, to speak my mind, to speak from my heart and from my mind, and in accordance with the stance and also my sentiments. This stance is not the stance of the harsh hearts. And allow me also to speak quickly in order to take advantage of the time and in order to speak about the issues which I intend to address. In this gathering, first of all, our aim is to declare our rejection and our denunciation and our condemnation of the Saudi American aggression against Yemen and its people, and to also declare our support and our solidarity with this people, with this noble, oppressed people. This is the aim of the gathering. We view the way we identify as a group, we view that it is our humanitarian, moral, jihadist, religious duty to take this stance. This is how we identify it ourselves. This is how we view it. And all of the sons of the Ummah must also, once again, look at the responsibility and take the stance which they find appropriate. Regarding us, nothing will prevent us. Threats, terrorizing, repercussions, nothing will prevent us from continuing our declaration of this stance. The stance of denunciation, denouncing the Saudi American aggression against Yemen, and also declaring our stance of support of this oppressed resistance people, the people of steadfastness and the people who will, God willing, achieve victory. This stance from day one, we declared it for God and for Judgment Day, not for history nor for geography. Let history write what it wants. We are a group who are responsible. We will be held responsible in front of Allah and will be held accountable for our responsibility in this very dangerous, major historic phase, which not only targets Yemen, but also the region and the Ummah as a whole. Second, before beginning and speaking about the main issues in this aggression, we are, and at this time, we must stand humbly in front of the steadfastness of our people in Lebanon, especially in Jabal Amel in the south. At these same days, in 1996, when the Zionist entity, as usual with an American and Western and Arab blessing, it launched its aggression on Lebanon. At that time they called the operation the Grapes of Wrath, and our people, our resistance, our army stood and the martyrs fell. So we stand humbly in front of all of the martyrs who fell during that heroic confrontation, especially the martyrs of Qana. This still remains. It will permanently be a reminder of the barbarity of the Zionist entity and those who protected and supported. And also we stand humbly in front of the great achievements of the resistance fighters, Hezbollah and the Ahmad movement, and the national resistance and the Lebanese army. This heroic stance, the results which it led to the victory of Lebanon. It led to the victory of Lebanon in the year 2000, And for the first time, the Arabs got rid of the era of defeats and went into the era of... Regarding the current aggression, I will now mention a number of issues. Sometimes I will speak about, I will speak calmly, sometimes I will not. For every occasion has its uniqueness. The first is regarding the aims of the war. The second is regarding the results of the aggression up until now. And the third is the horizon. What's on the horizon? Like we say in Lebanon, where are we going? The fourth is why this clear, open stance from Hezbollah towards Saudi Arabia. This is a legitimate question which I must respond to today. And if time remains, I'll give some advice to some people or some sides in Lebanon, if time remains. The first, regarding the first main issue, the aim of the aggression, in my first speech after days, just days after the aggression began, I spoke about the justifications, the false justifications which the Saudi regime spoke of in order to justify their war on Yemen. They spoke about restoring legitimacy to the resigned president whose term has ended, and the Saudis also spoke about the assumed or the supposed Yemeni threat to Saudi Arabia, a preemptive war, and they also spoke about confronting Iranian occupation or Iranian hegemony. In the first speech, I explained this, so I don't want to repeat. I'll begin from here, but what I did say is that the real aim, after I explained and I discussed and I argued in a logical way with evidence regarding these false justifications, I said indeed the real goal of this war is to restore Saudi American hegemony in Yemen after the Yemeni people retrieved their decision making and sovereignty and rejected any kind of foreign hegemony. This is their aim. Now, after that, during those weeks, as the weeks passed, in the speeches of the Saudi officials and also some of the allies of Saudi Arabia and the spokesman of Operation Decisive Storm and some politicians, some experts who support this aggression, they also raised a number of issues and justifications. Now, I'll speak about the following. Number one, they said this is the war of the Arabs. This is the war of Arabism. Now, their problem with us is that we are Arabs. Now, if they accuse us that we are with someone or we are affiliated with someone, anyway, we are Arabs. Even if they say this, they said that the aim of this war is to defend the Arabism of Yemen. Now, did the Arab people, did they assign the Saudi regime to wage a war on their behalf against Yemen? Number two, an Arab war against who? The Arabs' war against who? Against an Arab people? Against the Arabs? Look at them. Look at their language. Look at their tone. Look at their poetry. Look at how they are. Look at their education, and look at their honor and their courage, and look at their enthusiasm, and look also how they put up with pain. Look at their dignity. So if the Yemeni people, if they are not Arabs, then who are Arabs? If the Yemeni people are not Arabs, then who are Arabs? Before Islam, they were the civilization of the Arabs. When the Arabian Peninsula, when their inhabitants didn't know how to read or write, and they used to fight each other. They used to fight over water and fight over brides who were kidnapped. And in Yemen, there was a civilization, and in Yemen, there was also a civil life. in the Arab Peninsula, when the highest political authority was the sheikh of the tribe or the leader of the tribe, at that time in Yemen there were kings from amongst the Arabs. After Islam, the Yemenis have a lot. We owe it a lot to the Yemenis regarding Islam in the jihad. All countries of Islam bear witness to the Yemeni role. Indonesia, the biggest Islamic country today, who brought Islam to Indonesia? The Yemeni businessmen, the Yemeni clerics, the Yemeni tribes, they are known. Their ancestors are well known. They are written down. They are mentioned in history. They are present also in the books and in the education of tribes and ancestors, etc., etc. The Yemenis do not need any degree to prove their Arab identity, nor do they need anything to prove their Islamic identity. But I say, he who wages an aggression against the Yemeni people, they are the ones who should look for a degree, search for something to prove their Arab and Islamic identity. This is the first topic. This is the first. Now, it's okay. They can go and say, what's wrong with Sayyid Hassan? Nothing's wrong with me. Nothing. But such talk requires such a tone. Such oppression requires such a tone. It's shameful. There are some people who we don't know anything about. We don't know from where they have come from. And they are coming now to speak with the Yemenis and say, ask if they're Arabs or not, and express doubts whether or not they're Arabs. Second, regarding the goals which were promoted, trying to give the battle and the war a sectarian dimension. That's the easiest thing to do, especially as some clerics in Saudi Arabia, some officials, some high-ranking clerics said this is a Sunni-Shia war. But anyway, we will not waste time with this matter, because today in the Arab world, nor in the Islamic world, nobody accepts this. Except by money, except those who are toyed around and used by money. Nobody is convinced this is a Sunni-Shia war. This is a Saudi aggression on Yemen for political reasons. Number three, the most laughable matter and the most painful at the same time was raised over the past few weeks. And in some Arab and Islamic countries, a call was made. A call was made for jihad. And under the reason or justification of defending the two holy mosques, the two holy Muslim sites in Mecca and Medina. Meaning Al-Kaaba and the holy mosque in Medina. Who is threatening the two holy sites? Are the Yemeni people threatening these holy sites? Is Ansarullah any component? Is the Yemeni army threatening these holy sites? The Yemeni people are well known. They love the Prophet. They love also going ahead, paying these visits, and they are really enthusiastic in order to visit the Holy Prophet. I will tell you, because today is a day of frankness to speak to God. I will tell you, yes, there is a threat posed to the two holy sites. But from whom? First of all, from ISIL. Because we heard months ago, after it declared its emirate in Mosul, it declared that it will come to the Arabian Peninsula and destroy Al-Kaaba, because Al-Kaaba, according to ISIL, according to its way of thinking, Al-Kaaba is just some black rocks and it is worshipped without worshipping God, and it is in contradiction with worshipping the one and only. And we all know where this ISIL way of thinking comes from. Yes, the holy site is in danger, yes, but from who? I will tell you from who. Its threat comes from inside. This threat comes from inside Saudi Arabia, from the Wahhabi way of thinking and the Wahhabi culture. Yes, the holy site is in danger, yes, but from who? I will tell you from who. Its threat comes from inside. This threat comes from inside Saudi Arabia, from the Wahhabi way of thinking and the Wahhabi culture. They will now say, Sayyid Hassan, you are accusing without any reason. But look at all history books in Yemen, Syria, Saudi Arabia, on the internet. Go back and look at them. After King Abdul Aziz Al Saud, he who established Saudi Arabia, after he took control, and in year 1926, in April, in these very same days, in April, his followers, his Wahhabist followers, based upon their culture and their ideology, they destroyed all religious sites and historic sites, though, which are related to the Prophet, except for the grave, the homes, also anything related to his companions, the graves, the historical sites. They left nothing. Maybe they left something as an exception, but in general, generally speaking, they destroyed everything. The judge who went to Medina, he had a decision, and he had been given a mandate to destroy the grave of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. And this history is proven. I didn't invent it. This has been proven. It has been mentioned before I was born. And so therefore, it began. They began attacking the religious and historic sites in Mecca and Medina. Before they reached the grave of the Prophet, they began with the companions, the wives of the Prophet, the family. They demolished all of them. They left nothing. It was all sand, and they put one rock above and one rock below. And he was then going to go ahead and destroy the grave of the Prophet. But then the cry came out in the Islamic world. All hell broke loose in Egypt and in India. At that time, Pakistan was still part of India. It didn't separate. And Turkey and Iran and Iraq and the countries of the Mashriq, of the Near East. A lot of furor came out. But also, and this was something which was a coincidence, the two countries which had the biggest impact in preventing King Abdul Aziz Al Saud from going ahead and allowing the Wahhabis to take this step were Egypt and India, meaning Pakistan currently, into Pakistan today. The historic stance of the Al-Azhar Mosque in Cairo and the higher imam, the historic stance of the ulama of the Muslims, Sunni and Shia, from all different sects. This is what prevented the demolishing of the grave of the Prophet, may peace be upon him. Al Saud and the Wahhabis also, they wanted to destroy this grave in 1926, in April. And he who says, I'm lying, let him come and bring the historic documents. Of course, this is in agreement with their culture and their way of thinking. So the king had to back down, and he was held responsible by the Wahhabis. They made him pay for this, and he was obliged to hold a conference for the Islamic world, and the ulama came and made speeches, and the grave of the Prophet remained. But they said nobody could approach. You could just say hello from far away. This is the Prophet of Mercy who saved the Ummah. This Ummah today and throughout history, the Ummah of the Arabs, the Ummah of the Arabs before Islam, which was before. And if there is any greatness and dignity and presence and richness and dignity in this world, it is because of this man, the last of the prophets, Muhammad, may peace be upon him. This is the way they dealt with him. Yes, the holy site is under threat. We don't know when a group of youth who are learning in the schools of the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia, we don't know when they could take the decision and then put explosives on themselves and blow up the holy site, the grave of the Prophet. But the threat does not come from Yemen. This is a lie and it's misleading. The second goal, or the other goal, they said, the Saudi officials and those who are with them, they said that the aim of the aggression, or they said the war, is to defend the Yemeni people. Yes. This is how you defend the Yemeni people, by a siege from land, air and sea. A siege not on the Houthis, not on the fighters, but a siege imposed on 24 million Yemenis. It's not allowed to eat, drink, to be provided with medical supplies. International organizations say there are a high number of wounded who are dying because there are no medical necessities. A siege imposed on all Yemeni people, causing hunger to the people, preventing the medical supplies necessary to treat them, preventing these supplies from reaching them, and what is worse, committing massacres against civilians and women and children. And like Israel in Lebanon and Gaza, why? Because the fighters have placed arms in civilian areas. Why? Because they have placed tanks amongst civilians. The same rhetoric used by Israel, committing massacres against civilians and women and children. Is this an allegation? Look at the television screens. Yes, the satellite televisions supportive of Decisive Storm did not broadcast these images. Every television station which is afraid for its money won't broadcast these images. Every television which is afraid of being dropped from the Arab satellite will not broadcast these images, but many television stations do broadcast these images. Hundreds of martyrs, thousands of wounded, destroying everything, homes, marketplaces, civilian areas, schools, electricity stations, hospitals, also factories, food supplies, and some have nothing to do with it. And some of those who own these factories are Wahhabists. But they didn't even ask. Anything which provides supplies must be destroyed. This was also a clear lie. Do you defend and preserve the Yemeni people by killing them? What kind of a goal is this? Number five, I don't know, number five, six, but anyway, the next. Defending the Yemeni state, defending it against the possibility of Ansar Allah taking control. Okay, how are you defending the Yemeni state? By bombing the Yemeni military installations and also destroying the helicopters and tanks of the Yemeni army. Targeting state institutions, targeting its airports, its harbors. Is this the way you preserve the Yemeni state? By destroying it? Is this how you preserve it? And finally, after all of this killing and destruction, can anyone believe, is there any sane person in the world who would believe that the aim of this war is to restore Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi to the presidency? In order to return Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi to the presidency, you wage this war, and now in the fourth week after all this has happened? That's unbelievable. That can't be believed. Anyway, I will conclude by saying, and especially to the Lebanese, you can recall the July war and you can also sense, you can see the similarity, the siege from the land, from the sea and the air, massacres, very high conditions, killing, breaking bones, a very harsh media campaign, and we were the ones who were going on an adventure. But in the end, we were victorious. Look at everything which is happening now in Yemen, and you will discover it is the same war, the same mindset, and the same goals. And the result will also be the same result. The second main topic is the results of the aggression and what it has achieved up until now regarding the declared goals. Now, we're in day 22. If I made a mistake in one day less, one day more, anyway. In the second main topic, Let's take a look at the results. After 22 days of air bombardment and artillery bombardment, and also bombardment from the sea and air raids, and providing all kinds of intelligence and logistical support from the Americans, and also all forms of support which are being given from Saudi Arabia to ISIL and Al-Qaeda, along with those who are fighting with them inside Yemen. Okay, they said that the goal, I will speak about failure and about other results. They said failure, the failure of Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi and his government. He's still in Riyadh. And they said that returning him, they will return him to Aden or Sana'a. But he did not return to Aden nor to Sana'a. In Mukalla, now we have learned the names of some provinces and cities. In Al-Mukalla, if he wants to go to Al-Mukalla, to Al-Qaeda, okay, because he's fighting with them, they are fighting with each other. But in Aden, doesn't seem he'll go there, and of course he won't go back to Sana'a. But because of this aggression, before the aggression, if there was some hope for a settlement or for dialogue, if there was some hope that Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi would return by dialogue or by settlement, this has now ended. It's no longer possible, and no political settlement. This is what the Yemeni people are saying. No political settlement can return Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi to the presidency, and I think that the Saudis have understood this, and step by step they are decreasing their demands. And maybe this is one of the reasons behind appointing Al-Bahah as a vice president, and from day one he began to speak about the settlement, and he also calls on the Saudi army not launching a ground invasion into Yemen. So the first is a failure in returning the president whom you waged the war. You waged the war in order to return him. Second, they said that their goal is to prevent the Yemeni army and the popular committees from reaching Aden specifically because of the symbolism of Aden. But forget what the satellite stations who support this campaign, forget what they're saying. Aden is under the control of the Yemeni army and popular committees. Maybe in some small areas in Aden there's still some fighting, but this has ended. Number three, they also said that the aim of the air raids, of course the spokesman of the campaign was always speaking about this, they said that an aim was to prevent the Yemeni army and popular committees from reaching the other provinces, but they failed here as well. Most of the provinces are under control of the army and popular committees. There are some provinces, Hadramaut, but generally speaking, most of the provinces are under control of the Yemeni army and popular committees, and the advances are continuing, and Al-Qaeda and its allies are retreating more and more and heading more and more towards defeat. And also, they said one of the aims is to break the will of the Yemeni people. From day one, when their shoulders were still standing, when they were still standing high, they spoke about conditions. First of all, withdrawing. Second, handing over arms. Number three, for example, something else. So what is required is to make the Yemenis deter in order to agree to these conditions, make them surrender. Isn't this one of the aims in any campaign? This is an aim. What is the result? The result is that there is a very great Yemeni steadfastness amongst the people, army, and a political will. Another result is that there is enthusiasm and patience and an ability to put up with difficulties. This was surprising and amazing, and a huge turnout in the popular mobilization and joining the fronts and tribal meetings, which you're seeing on television, and very large popular demonstrations despite the air bombardment on the capital and the cities, readiness for a long war. And up until now, known. Number five, failure in transforming the internal conflict, in transferring the internal conflict and creating a conflict between Zaydis and Shafi'is, or in another in another way to say it, between Sunnis and Shia, or between the North and South, or the South and the North. And the result is a real Yemeni national stance against the aggression. All information says that some of those who are still silent in Yemen, they have begun to speak out. Some of the popular bases who are affiliated with a political group that supports the aggression are now disassociating themselves from the stances of the political parties they support, for the leaders they support. This is also a failure. Also, one of the assumed goals, and it's a very important goal I spoke about in the first time, but I'll speak about it from a different angle. What did the Saudis say? They said that in Yemen we have a potential threat, so I want to wage a preemptive war. But what did you do? What did you do against this potential threat? First of all, if this threat did not exist before, you made it exist. This is the first result. And second, if it is a potential threat, you made it a sure, certain threat. Let's assume that there is some group in Yemen which really was thinking of threatening Saudi Arabia. Let's assume that there was indeed such a group in Yemen thinking of threatening the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Not just as an assumption. Let's say you had clear information. What did you do with this aggression against the Yemeni people? You changed the threat from a potential threat to a certain threat at the level of the Yemeni people as a whole. Today, those you accuse of posing a threat, they are still standing. They are still there. The leadership of Ansar Allah, look at it. This great leader, despite his youth, this wise, courageous leader, Sayyid Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi, may God make him achieve victory and may God guard him. This man, this leader, this leadership, if it indeed posed a threat, this is now its chance to bomb Saudi Arabia and to launch missiles against Saudi Arabia and to attack Saudi Arabia and enter into Najran and Jizan and Asir. Now it is its chance. The Yemeni people are calling for this. The Yemeni tribes are calling for this. Today is day 22 and everyone's asking, where is the response? Why are you still waiting? This is called strategic patience in the new terms. Strategic patience. What did you do? You changed the situation from an absent threat, not to a potential threat, but to a certain threat. Because the Yemenis, I read a few days ago, the Saudis said, no, we will continue. The Yemenis are tribal people, tribal society, who respect the strong sides. We are the strong and we come and impose what we want. But you, the Saudi regime, I mean, the tribal societies are also society of revenge. Societies who don't forget the victims, those who were killed amongst them. So what can we say when their women and children have been killed? You have taken yourselves and are now confronting the greater threat. Number seven, a moral failure. And also fear from the upcoming events. What remains? There are goals, just as July 2006 war. Now, the targets have ended, but they came back and struck the targets a second and third time. Today, there are destroyed buildings which are being bombed once again. And the air war does not prevent the advance of troops. And if people have a will, they can reach wherever they want. And Yemen is very, very large, a very large territory. We in the south, which is very, very small in South Lebanon, and in Gaza, which is also very small geographically, and the warplanes were filling the sky and a lot of intelligence, and they did not prevent the movement of the missile launching pads or the movement of artillery, nothing. So now you're going to witness the following. Okay, this air bombardment has ended, but the people have not bowed down, have not surrendered. What will you do? You have no option but to go to a ground operation. So go ahead with the ground operation. Now, here it will come clear, because this is an army, the Saudi army. Hundreds of billions of dollars were spent on this army. Every weapons deal is worth $60 and $70 billion. But when the push comes to shove against a people whose capabilities are well known, and whose weapons are well known, and you have enough information. The Saudis know everything in Yemen. So go ahead, but they don't have the courage to take this step. Then the Mufti calls for mandatory military recruitment, and then I call for jihad in Saudi Arabia and the Islamic and Arab world, and they lie to the people and say in defense of the two holy sites, and then they say we want to hire armies. We want to hire armies in order to enter Yemen. And if this army, if the government of this country does not accept for us to hire this army, we will insult it, and we will say, we fed you, we gave you drink and money. Shame on you, you didn't help us. This is what we call buying conscience. What does it mean? It means you pay someone money so that he can wage a war against his own convictions. But if someone is fighting for a cause which he's convinced about, whether you give him money or not, he will fight. But if you do give him money, this is support. But the first case is buying conscience. Now, today, this is the situation for the regime and the army. On the other hand, the Yemenis have not resorted to their real options, not yet. And this is my information and my analysis. They haven't done anything yet. What the Yemenis are capable of doing, they have not done anything of what they are capable of doing. They are still ordering their situation inside the country. But you have reached the dead end. Now, 22 days, that's the dead end. What more can air bombardment do? You still have a ground operation. Let us see. Of course, I'm not encouraging, but just out of argument. There is a real problem regarding their morale. Anyway, it's enough to end by saying, when you speak about results and achievements, of course, there are people who very early spoke about the victory of Operation Decisive Storm, just as in the first days in 2006, they considered that Israel has achieved victory and Hezbollah has been eliminated and its allies, and this person is going crazy and we're going to have to go look for him in the hospitals of Paris. Isn't this what they said? But anyway, calm down. But I call on you, he who wants to participate can, but watch the press conference of the spokesman of Operation Decisive Storm, and you can see daily this poor man, how his eyes are rolling, how he's looking for any achievement to present to the media, and he's not finding any achievement. The third is the horizon. Where is it headed? Now, we believe, and I hope that we're mistaken, I believe that it might take time. It might take time before the Saudi regime will be convinced that the horizon is closed and that this people will not surrender, and you know you have no interest in continuing with this battle, so please come down from your tree. And there are many here in the world who are ready to bring them down from the tree, many who are ready to provide them with a solution, but it seems that they're not ready yet. It seems that some of them still have some hope. They say that I might put pressure on the Pakistanis, on the Egyptians, on some others. It might need some time. But anyway, up until now, those voices who are calling for a political solution and for an end of the war and a political settlement, these voices, there are many of the voices in the world, but it seems that they are not listening to these voices. Nobody should believe that the whole world is with Saudi Arabia. Most of the voices in the world say that the war should stop and we must search for a political solution. So it needs time before these people will come down, will put their feet on the ground and will accept the facts and search for an exit. The Security Council, which should have sponsored an end of the war and end of aggression and should have searched for a solution. Unfortunately, it took the decision which we saw 2 days ago. I say to the Yemeni people, do not feel sorrow, do not be surprised. This is the Security Council. That's its nature. Do you expect anything else? The Security Council accepts the proposal of the oppressor. In the Arab-Israeli conflict, this was always the case. They accept the proposal of the oppressor and ignore the victim. They even strike the victim along with the oppressor. Isn't this what happened with Palestine? So it doesn't deserve, this Security Council resolution does not deserve me to stop and focus on its results and highlight this decision. It has no value. When it has value with Israel, then we'll discuss if it has value with us. Anyway, regarding the horizon, the future, it's clear that the air bombardment will not reach results and the ground operation is not clear. The result of such a ground operation will be defeat. Whoever goes ahead with this ground operation, the Yemenis have no choice but to stand with steadfastness, which will lead to the failure of the aggression, and they are completely ready. They announce every time, all the time, that they are ready for a political solution, but on condition that the war stops. And here at the end of this segment, I must thank the Pakistani parliament and the Pakistani people and the Pakistani government for their stance. That's the truth. Pakistan means India of 1926. Today, because or on this occasion, once again, I want to issue a call to the brothers in Pakistan and the brothers in Egypt, the Egyptian leadership, the Al-Azhar Mosque, and the Egyptian people. My call is, just as Egypt and India, which became Pakistan, just as they prevented and just as they played the bigger role in preventing the destruction of the grave of the Prophet of God, may peace be upon him, we also call on you to prevent the destruction of one of the countries of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. And we call on you not to be partners in such an act in order to further increase your honor and your dignity, the dignity which you built before. Today, the Islamic war, these Islamic countries must intervene and put pressure on those who insist on war and killing and destruction, to put pressure in order to bring an end to the war and sponsor a political solution. Neither us nor anyone in Yemen nor anyone in the region are saying that we want to topple the regime in Saudi Arabia. No, no one's saying this. What we want from Saudi Arabia, we want everything. We want stability and security for their people. We want well-being for the Saudis. But all we want is to save Yemen from this deliberate catastrophe. The fourth main issue, and if a couple of minutes remain, I'll end with my advice to the Lebanese. The fourth main segment of the speech is, why, Hezbollah, why are you raising the level of your rhetoric? Why? For 32 years, you haven't spoken in such a manner towards Saudi Arabia. If you want to discuss the issue of Saudi Arabia, you must wear gloves and look in corners and search for certain terms. Arabic, the Arabic language helps a lot. The question is, why, with such clarity, with such openness, are you speaking about Saudi Arabia? Of course, we have come late. Many others spoke before us. In many places in the Arab world, people spoke out before us. We have come late. But what is the question is, why, with such clarity, with such openness, are you speaking about Saudi Arabia? Of course, we have come late. Many others spoke before us. In many places in the Arab world, people spoke out before us. We have come late. But what is the reason? They say, for example, does this serve Lebanon's interests, the interests of the Lebanese? And brothers, please, keep calm. Of course, we do not insult, but they consider any criticizing as an insult. If I say, for example, that the Wahhabis in 1926 went ahead and destroyed the graves and the religious and historic sites and the houses of the faithful and the companions of the Prophet and the relatives of the Prophet, and they almost destroyed the grave of the Prophet, may peace be upon him, were it not for the Islamic world, they would then say that I insult. While I'm speaking historic facts, I'm not insulting anyone. I'm not insulting, cursing his mother or father, nor am I using dirty words. I'm saying the truth. Anyone who has another truth, let him give it to us. But allow us to speak. Anyway, this is a legitimate question which we must pose. Look, brothers and sisters, and all those who are listening, I don't want to open old matters. I want to go back to old matters. Today, today is the anniversary of the civil war. What did the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia give to Lebanon? Money, weapons, and after 1975, in 1982, and in 1983, and 1984, and after in 2006, you know. Let us put this aside. Let's forget the past. Yes, we were very intent on not speaking out in the open, despite the information we have about what was going on in Syria for 4 years. And we considered that the Syrian regime, not the Syrian regime, we didn't consider that regime was the target, but the region as a whole, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, resistance, everyone was targeted. Between brackets, just to remind you, to remind the Lebanese Muslims and Christians, imagine that this army would not have persevered, and many times they speak in double standards. A very high percentage of the Syrian people made this decision, and if Syria had fallen into the hands of Al-Qaeda, just as Mosul fell into the hands of Al-Qaeda, which later became ISIL, where would Lebanon be? Where would Lebanon's Muslims be? Where would Lebanon's Christians be? Where would the churches and mosques be? Where would the women be? The country of tourism. Will they leave you any tourist site? Look at Iraq. Everything related to the family of the Prophet, they destroyed it. Do you think they'll leave anything, any tourist sites? So yes. And I once again say, and I'll say it every day, and I have no shame in saying it. And today I'll add something new. Just as I said on the 8th of March 2005, thank you, Syria, today, because you survived. Thank you, Syria, today, because you did not surrender. Thank you, Syria, today, because you did not bow down to this takfiri black ideology. So, we knew all this, but we didn't speak about it. We didn't say it in the open. Everything which is happening in Iraq from 2003, we knew it. I didn't say it out loud. We didn't say it out loud. I referred to it in the first speech. In Bahrain, of course, they entered directly. Elsewhere, indirectly. Indirectly in Syria, Iraq, and Saudi financing, Saudi incitement, Saudi managing. They will say, they will respond and say, you're making accusations, false accusations. This is a kingdom of charity. They only build schools and hospitals only. But in Bahrain, they directly entered and they crushed the bones of the Bahrainis, and they struck and they oppressed the peaceful movement. Everything they are demanding in Bahrain are normal reforms. And ulama and symbolic figures were put in prison. The last of them was Sheikh Ali Salman, the Secretary General of Al-Wefaq, and thousands of prisoners under the worst conditions they live. And they prevented the political solution and political dialogue in Bahrain. But despite this, we wanted to come from a different angle. Why? Because maybe there is some place left for reconciliation or dialogue. In Lebanon, we were always those who called for Iranian-Saudi dialogue, because it helps if they sat down and reached an understanding. Of course it helps. But I want to say to you, for years, and I know the details, and I know very precise information about meetings. For years, Iran has been striving to hold dialogue with Saudi Arabia and striving to hold meetings with Saudi Arabia and reach an understanding with Saudi Arabia, and has been extending the arm of hand of brotherhood and dialogue to Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia always refused, and it refused in a very insulting way as well. One of the high-ranking Iranian officials I met with him here, one of those who visited Lebanon, I said, "My dear brother, everywhere you go, you say, I'm ready to go to Riyadh and to meet and visit. But once, twice, three times, four, five times, they didn't respond. That's enough. There's dignity." But despite this, the Iranians continued. And today I say, the Islamic Republic, this is my knowledge, the Islamic Republic is ready, and it believes in dialogue between Muslim countries and with Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia is rejecting. Why is it rejecting? Because it believes that in Syria it failed, in Lebanon it failed, and in Iraq it failed, and I don't know where else it failed. It's looking for some kind of success, for some success, before it goes to the table of dialogue or understanding. Success by crushing bones and killing the women and children of Bahrain or of Yemen. That's not true. It's not true that they have any readiness for dialogue. Anyway, today, the time has come to speak openly, clearly, to say things as they are. Today, there is no proxy war which requires evidence. Today, the Saudi officials declared war. The Saudi ambassador to Washington, from Washington, he declared the war. The spokesman of Operation Decisive Storm speaks from Riyadh. The Saudi army is bombing from the borders. The Saudi warplanes are also bombing and killing and targeting. Does this require evidence? Does it still require evidence? Number two, is there any room left for reconciliation? No. Where is this room? Although we are all calling for a settlement and for a political solution, according to us, the time has come, according to us, and this is not obligatory for any ally or friend or any beloved, but it's our right to speak our mind. The time has come for the Muslims and the Arabs and the Islamic world to stand and say to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, enough, enough. Today, a question to all the Arab peoples. A question to all the Arab peoples. This ideology of those groups who destroy societies, they destroy societies. What happened in Iraq? What happened to the Christians, the Yazidis, the Sunnis who don't have a Wahhabi ideology, the Kurds, the Arabs, the Turkmens? There are communities, societies that were destroyed. These groups who have an ideology that destroys societies and destroys armies and destroys countries and destroys the Ummah, this ideology, it's the ideology of who? Where did it come from? The school of who? The books of who? The culture of who? The fatwas of who? Who is distributing and spreading this ideology in the world? Who is teaching this ideology in their educational systems, in the preliminary high school and in the university? Who is building schools throughout the world to teach the Muslim youth this takfiri, destructive ideology? Very clearly, I say, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, with the money of Muslims, with the money of Hajj Bayt Allah al-Haram, meaning the money of the Hajj. For the sake of Syria, for the sake of Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Bahrain, for the sake of the Gulf countries, for the sake of Egypt and Libya, for the sake of Somalia and Kenya, for the sake of every country which has a takfiri group that kills and carries out massacres, for the sake of all this, the world must stand up and say to Saudi Arabia, enough. That is the reason. For the sake of Syria, for the sake of Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Bahrain, for the sake of the Gulf countries, for the sake of Egypt and Libya, for the sake of Somalia and Kenya, for the sake of every country which has a Takfiri group that kills and carries out massacres. For the sake of all this, the world must stand up and say to Saudi Arabia, enough. That is the reason. If I'm speaking in an illogical way, don't accept what I'm saying. Are you surprised? The world is surprised. How is it that ISIL in Iraq destroyed the cities and destroyed the sites and statues? But they are the sons of those, the school of those, the school of 1926 Saudi Arabia. Don't be surprised, but at that time there was no satellite television. But today I saw some of the news presenters who were impacted, who were very much impacted and touched by the statues more than they could be touched by the damage done to human beings. But the money, where is the money from? Where is the sectarian incitement from? Where are the weapons coming from? So yes, we have reached the conviction after the Yemeni war, we in Hezbollah, point. We are not obliging anyone. We will not request from any of our allies, and we understand any stance from any one of our allies. This is the conviction we have reached as a component of the Ummah. The higher interest of Lebanon, we in the higher interests of Lebanon in confronting the occupation, we sacrifice martyrs, thousands of martyrs, Hezbollah, the Amal movement, the national parties, the Palestinian factions, the Lebanese army, the Syrian army, and also for the sake of Lebanon's higher interests, we must also make sacrifices. The higher interest of the people of the Ummah and the countries says this higher interest means that we all, the countries, let's put aside everything else. Let's put aside this money. We must all say to the rulers in Saudi Arabia, enough, you've destroyed everything. You've brought people about to kill each other. Where are you taking us? And I say to you that the biggest loser in everything which has taken place and is taking place is Palestine, the people of Palestine, the Palestinian cause. The biggest winner is Israel and Netanyahu. For the sake of all of those, we must raise our voice. This is our view, and we are raising the voice. And I'm speaking here very clearly, with complete clarity. Don't imagine anything that could come to your mind which that anyone could threaten us with. Nothing. No threats could prevent us from raising our voice. Call it crying out. Okay, this is crying out to God in the cause of God for the sake of worshiping God. Those who are whose blood is being spilt in all countries, in all Muslim countries. Today, Al-Qaeda and its branches in the world, where did they come from? ISIL and Nusra, Boko Haram in Nigeria, which is even worse. Al-Shabaab movement in Somalia, which goes into hospitals and slaughters people, goes into marketplaces and slaughters people just because they're Christians. They go into universities and also slaughter people. Boko Haram. So where did they all come from? Their books. Go back and take a look at their books, their cultures, their ideology. Anyway, enough wars, enough sectarian incitement, enough misleading in the name of Islam and the two holy sites, the governments, the kings, the presidents, the people, the ulama, everyone must take this responsibility. And in the remaining 2 minutes, I want to give some advice to some Lebanese. We disagreed regarding Yemen, yes, and we disagreed before Yemen regarding Syria. And before Syria, we disagreed about Lebanon. So my advice to some in Lebanon is calm down. Pull your horses back. Calm down. Don't celebrate the victory of Operation Decisive Storm just yet. Wait a bit. Don't miscalculate. Just leave open some options. 4 years ago, all your policies and all your strategies and all your tactics and your political rhetoric and your slogans and your alliances were based on the fall of the Syrian regime or government in 2 months. And here we are in year number 5. And you were obliged to reach the stage whereby you say, yes, this happened, so calm down. You have your own way. You have your own reading of the matter. We have our own. We can criticize. We shouldn't curse each other. We shouldn't consider that criticizing is cursing. I don't believe if someone criticizes me or I criticize him, I don't consider this as being cursing. And in the end, just as the situation in Syria, just like the situation in Syria, also regarding the situation in Yemen, let each side express his convictions and express his view in the way he finds appropriate. But I advise to remain within the ethical boundaries, and I say I remain within these ethical boundaries, and in the end, we here in Lebanon, we want to live together, we want to continue together, we want to continue and work together. And just as we worked on disassociating Lebanon from the crisis and conflict in Syria, despite its great dangers, the same regarding Yemen. We don't want the Yemeni conflict to be transferred to Lebanon. I advise you not to transfer it to Lebanon. I say this, and here I quote what one of the believers said, one of the believers during the time of the Pharaoh. Assume that I'm one of his companions. You will recall what I say, and I resort to God. God knows what the worshippers will do. The Yemenis will persevere. They will confront. They are capable of this. They have the leadership. They have the qualification, the army, the people, the men, women, and children whom we saw. We saw some of the examples of them just before. And he who has such traits will achieve victory. Certainly. Once again, I thank all of you for this blessed turnout. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement, speaking there live in Beirut, speaking about, of course, the continuing Saudi-led airstrikes on Yemen, now the 23rd day of those airstrikes.